VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here alive and well and in full living color, as always on Saturday. The only thing worse than a financial show that is not live would be a pre-recorded show.
Wait, isn't that the same thing?
No, there's one worse than that.
What's that?
A rerun.
True.
And then there's one worse than all those.
What's that?
A rerun of a pre-recorded show.
Okay. Really put a lot of thought into this.
No, it actually just hit me while I was cleaning up my breakfast dishes.
All right.
Anyway, welcome everybody. We are live, as always, and we always intend to be. I'm very proud to say that in the about 4 1/3 years now that Adam and I have been doing the show, the only two times we were not live, it was for reasons that were quite beyond our control because we were all kicked out of town on mandatory evacuations for hurricanes, and the station wasn't even running any programming on those 2 days. Other than that, we have been here every time, and the reason I think it's important is because if you pre-record the show, then you talk about what you want to do 100%. But on a live show, you out there can talk about whatever you want by simply picking up the phone and dialing 904-222-8255. Easy to remember way, 222-TALK. And we will always put our callers to the head of the line. We celebrate this weekend in America because of the 650,000 plus people who died for our freedom defending it. I think a lot of them would probably be appalled today at how much freedom we have given up, but it is still important and probably more important than ever right now that we do what we can to preserve the freedoms we have left and hopefully even maybe expand on them over the years. And I'm not going to go any deeper into that because you can talk about those things during the week in all of your political shows, and it won't do a darn thing for your 401k. And speaking of your 401k, Adam's going to speak to some of you for a while, sometime in the next 40, 51 minutes, about how to become a millionaire in your 401k. It turns out in this country that the preponderance of regular old millionaires, I'm not talking about the Bill Gateses and so on of the world, but the regular old people who have become millionaires, the greatest number of those have done it the old-fashioned way, saving and investing through their 401k plans.
Yep,
it is true. You too can do it, and there are keys to it. There are things, of course, you have to do. There are other things, of course, that you should never do.
It's usually, I think it's a combination of two things. It's saving in your 401k and buying a home. So you build equity in your house and you build savings in your 401k. And before you know it, it's actually not even that hard to do.
Angela and Howard were just talking. I was listening on the way in about the people who did the short sales back in the housing crisis and the foreclosures and how 40% of them have come around now. They called it boomeranging back to become homeowners again, which leaves 60% of you. And it reminded me of one of the things I saw this morning watching the news. The Admiral, I guess it was, Anyway, he wrote the book, First Make Your Bed. That's the guy he is. He's about discipline and common sense and doing all that. And he is a big, in fact, a huge supporter of the millennial generation. And the millennial generation does not get very good press. As you know, we love to make fun of them. There's some people that do great songs. But the strange thing about the millennials is what's happening to them. They're becoming traditional Americans the way I see it, me being over 60-something.
It's Admiral William H. McCraven retired.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's the one that led the raid that got bin Laden.
Gotcha.
And that is a feather in anybody's cap, I would say. But he loves the work ethic of the millennial generation. He loves the spirit. And from a financial standpoint, they are growing up, saving, buying homes, and doing all the right things. And they're doing it pretty early. So these are the people that this 401k article that Adam's going to go over, this is targeted at them. How do you become a long-term success? Well, first you got to be in it the long term, right?
Well, first you have to commit to starting your 401k contributions. I think that's the first step in any plan, or buying a house, either way.
The first step in the journey of the 1,000 miles, right?
Exactly.
All right, we are going to talk about the market. I've been avoiding it as long as I can. And I think that moment has arrived now. And we have had a losing streak lately, but it's not been a very significant losing streak.
No, surprisingly, it feels a lot worse than what it actually is. It's not good.
It's because it's been punctuated by really good days that are easily forgotten.
And then also we've seen some intraday moves that were quite large, only to see some buying into the close. So I believe Thursday, was it? It was down 450 points or something, and then ended up down less than 300. So that's a pretty big swing in the last hour. And then Friday, of course, was up. So the net of all that on the Dow was down just 178 points, which represents 0.7%. So it really wasn't that bad of a week, but it felt pretty bad. And it has, because it's also been, 5 weeks in a row. For the first time in 8 years, the Dow has declined for 5 weeks in a row.
And by the way, I will have a trivia question on that coming up right after the first break.
But even despite that, the index is still up 9.7% this year. And also in 2011, the last time this happened, the index was up over 5% for the year. So it's not indicative of a bad year just because this has happened. And since the peak, it's off just 3.7%. So over those 5 weeks in a row, it's down 3.7%, which is really just not that big of a number. So it's been a long decline, but a very, very slow decline. And the reason for it, I think, is very, very clear. It's the trade war. Markets hate uncertainty. And right now, that is such a huge uncertain event that we have hanging over the market. It's like a dark cloud that's... Is it going to rain? I don't know, but it definitely is what's holding things up. And if you need further proof of that, the Bespoke Research Group published a really telling graph yesterday. It showed that month to date, the S&P is down by just over 4%. But it broke down all the stocks in the S&P into deciles by international exposure. So those with the most international exposure are down over 10% in that same time period. And those with the least international exposure are down just over 2%. So if that's not proof that this is all about international trade and a potential trade war, I don't know what is.
I wrote one line in my notes this morning. It's still all about China, no matter what they say.
Yeah, exactly. And the good news in that is they published another graph showing the deciles with dividend payers. So the highest dividend payers to the lowest, and the ones with the highest dividends were down the least. So for value investors like us, that is really good news.
That is good news. What won this week? We had utilities, healthcare.
Utilities and healthcare were the only two positives, and then energy was the biggest loser, and technology was second to that.
Went off the
cliff, 7% down,
which is really funny because of all the turmoil over in the Middle East. But apparently, the unexpected rise in inventory caught people just a little bit off
that, there. And the fear that the trade war is going to slow down global shipping and things like that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know what? They're wrong.
Yeah.
They're
maybe
absolutely wrong. They're always wrong. Consumer sentiment is very high. Investor sentiment is very low. That is the perfect scenario.
For the market. Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And that's good for residential or commercial. All right, I said we're going to tie our trivia question today back to the market. We just finished a five-week losing streak for the Dow. Not for the other two, but for the Dow. And that hasn't happened for the last 8 years. So 8 years ago today, the Dow finished a 5-week losing streak. And my question is, what has been the compound annual average return on the Dow for those 8 years that started exactly 8 years ago today? How much per year compounded annually? Within 0.5%.
All right.
Yeah, you can do a guess if you want to, or you can figure it out. Frankly, it's easier to guess. All right, a little more on the market wrap. One of the things that caught my eye, the jobless claims, if you remember, dipped last week. And they had been kind of on the rise, and it was not yet known if the increase of the prior few weeks was the anomaly or if the dip was the anomaly. It came in at 211,000 this week, historically very, very low, and only 191,000 without the seasonal adjustment. This is not a labor market that is in any way, shape, or form troublesome.
No, no. That's not been the issue ever.
Nope.
At least in the last year and a half, 2 years. But there are some things out there that are a little more troubling. The bond market right now is not a pretty sight.
No.
It is. It's inverted twice this month. And add that to the once last month. That's three times in 2 months that the yield curve is inverted.
In the middle.
That I don't like. I don't like that one bit.
No.
The futures market is pricing in an 85.5% chance of an interest rate cut by the end of the year and a 30% chance of two cuts.
Now, I'll take that bet right now with anybody.
The two cuts, yeah.
No, any cuts.
Okay.
I'd take it even money right now that the Fed will not cut and will not raise.
I think it's ridiculous as well. I don't understand what they're seeing that we're not seeing.
Well, I do. They see nothing but gloom and doom because they listen to all the wrong radio shows.
but that's pretty astounding that there's only a 15% chance, according to the futures market, that there will be no rate cut in the rest of the year, and there's only six more meetings.
Yeah, it's just not in the cards, people. We got jobs numbers coming out again after the first of the month. This is not a recession waiting to happen. Inflation is a non-issue. Why does the Fed cut? To either stimulate the economy because it's slowing down or in recession, and to curb inflation if it's rising. We have none of that going on. Why would they cut?
Yeah, I don't see it either. I don't get it. It's pretty astounding, though, that the odds are that high. Or that's what the markets are pricing in.
Yep, but like I said, they listen to the wrong radio stations.
So outside the U.S., things were pretty mixed this week. Brazil saw a nice rebound of almost 6.5% just this week, and India gained more than 5%. Australia was also up nicely at 2.75%. European markets generally drifted a little lower, while China lost less than 1%. I thought that was interesting. China it's down over 11% this year, but this week it really just drifted. So hopefully that's sort of signaling that the trade war is being priced in, or they're getting more optimistic. One of those two things has to be true, I would
think.
What
did China not do recently?
I don't know.
Retaliated against the last round of Trump imposed tariffs.
Okay.
Now I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, trying to figure out what they're doing is an exercise in futility because
I have a theory.
There's just no way.
I have a theory about everything, but I have a theory. My theory is that they listen to CNN, and CNN portrays Trump as being about this close to being impeached every minute of every day. Therefore, ipso facto, Trump is weak, and China can do whatever they want to manipulate him. So that's why they're dragging their feet, not cutting a deal with Trump, because they figure they're going to get rid of him, and they're going to get some idiot who doesn't know about trade negotiations. And they're wrong. If they were watching the right news channels and figuring out what's really going on out there, they would be cutting that deal with Trump right now because they are getting their butts handed to them every single week in the market, and it's unnecessary.
It really is obvious that their economy is not doing well with this tariff situation. So there is an incentive there for them to do it, but they don't think like we do, and no. I'm not convinced anymore that they're going to do it.
Oh, I still am.
Okay.
I'm old enough to be optimistic.
Isn't that supposed to be the other way around?
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
I'm a contrarian. You know that.
So you mentioned it earlier, but oil dropped more than 7% this week. So mm-hmm. for those of you taking a road trip this weekend, that could be good news, although gas is quite high right now.
It's still 4 cents under last year at this time, though.
Right, but it's a lot higher than it was 6 months ago.
Yeah. As far as, is it historically oppressive at this price? No.
No, I don't think too many people are feeling it yet. Now, if it goes over, say, $3, $4, then you'll start to hear the complaints. But right now, it's still in that sort of moderate range that we can all deal with. Gold and silver both rose. The index, commodities index as a whole, was down 2.26%, and most of that was due to the oil. And then fixed income was up across the board. Yields were up. Long treasuries gained 1.3%. Short treasuries gained 8 basis points. So it was a good week to be in the bond market.
Yeah. Boy, we don't say that very often these days.
No.
Yeah. Things look good out there. Real good. I love the fact that investor sentiment is down below 25%.
Yeah. I always like.
Bullish sentiment.
Right.
I think that makes my day.
The market really needs a catalyst to mm-hmm. move up right now, though. It's got too much downward pressure and too many people looking to sell based on the news cycle. And so unless we get something that really moves it forward, hint, hint, China, I'm not convinced that we're going to see it move up.
I will repeat for those who tuned in the second block here, it's still all about China. If we get that deal with China, you better be in the market.
Yeah.
Or you better be awfully nimble getting back into the market.
This is true.
If you're out there holding against a potential disaster in the trade talks with China, you're certainly not following my advice. All right. A lot of things happening out there. Even though Congress was getting out of town, they managed to do something.
Oh, no.
Aren't you glad you were sitting down?
Yeah.
I'm glad I was.
That's never good news.
Well, you know, they might even have made an exception this time. Strangely
I know what
enough.
You're talking about. It actually is good news, but that's surprising.
Adam presented about a month ago a couple things that were being proposed into Congress. One was called the Secure Act and one was called RESA. And they both have to do with changes in retirement accounts, particularly on the side of the required minimum distributions. We've talked about this on and off for quite some time now, but we know that for some reason, and I guess it's probably just financial at the congressional level, the contributions to IRAs in particular, but 401ks and everything else, finally did a few years ago get indexed for inflation. But for a long time, they didn't. They're still historically very low, and I wish they'd change. That's not the side that they're working on in Congress right now. The side they're working on is required minimum distribution, which, as you probably know, kicks in when the account owner turns 70 and a half years old. Nice round number. But what has happened over many, many years that required minimum date is age 70 and a half is that lifespans have gotten larger. Now, the reason that they want you to take or demand that you take a required minimum distribution is so that you can drain the account, pay taxes, and it's supposed to last you, so it's technically geared to run out when you do. But what happened in that time was the increasing life expectancy has made that more of a risky proposition that you might run out of money prior to running out of life. So these two proposals are both set to increase the age for a required minimum distribution. Now, it seems like it should have added 5 years at least to it, but the truth of the matter is that because of some statistical anomalies, we've only actually gained about a year and a half in life expectancy. Now, if you factor out opioid deaths and murder rate, it's gone up dramatically. Mm-hmm. So if you're not taking pills or getting shot at, you're probably going to live a longer time. They haven't handled that yet, but even that has been proposed. But what this looks like it will do, they passed the Secure Act, and what this looks like it's going to do is raise that required minimum age to 72. If they do it fast enough, I'll have a big smile on my face.
Yeah.
They also are allowing contributions to carry on because you're probably aware that after age 70 and a half, and I mean the year you turn 70 and a half,
right,
you can no longer contribute to your IRA. Well, with a little luck, we're going to add a couple of years to that for contributions. And it looks to me like this is probably going to go through. Now, there's something in it I don't like. They are taking away, to make this more revenue equal, they're taking away the ability of an inheritor of an IRA to stretch it over his or her lifetime. Right now, you have two options. You've got the five-year option where it has to all be liquidated and taxed by that point, or you can stretch it, if you do it right, over your own lifetime. That looks like it's going away, but even that has compromised a little bit. The single rule that would replace the five-year rule and the stretch rule is the 10-year rule. Adam and I kind of hummed and hawed this one over a little bit in the office yesterday, and we decided, in exchange for those extra years, I could probably live with that.
I think it's a fair trade.
Yeah, so an okay compromise. All right, I'll wrap this up on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
All right, our trivia question remains open. We just passed and finished the gone but not forgotten, you might say, the fifth week in a row on the Dow that it was down. That hadn't happened for 8 years. 8 years ago today, it finished five, and it actually went another week down also. But in the 8 years that ended today, what has been the compound annual increase in the Dow? It's, I'll give you a hint, not one or two.
Nope.
And it's not negative, and it's not zero. So there, I just bracketed for you. All right, the Secure Act passed the House. And this part is interesting. The vote was something to the tune of 414 to 3
or
something
two
like
or,
that.
Yeah, something.
I have not seen bipartisan bills of this nature pretty much ever.
No, that's especially in this today's political environment.
Would I suppose beg the question, if it's such a darn good idea, what took so long? I've been talking about it for years.
I don't know.
There they go again, not listening to the right radio program. All right, so that's the one that's probably going to get through. And if it's got that kind of majority in the House, putting that through the Senate ought to be like falling off a log.
Yeah, I don't see it having any trouble passing.
And Trump's certainly not going to stand in the way of something like that.
No.
After all, he's one of us in the age group.
Yeah.
And
us.
He probably doesn't want to take his RMDs. Did I say us?
Yeah, you did.
All right, but what's going to happen next now? Well, one more thing. I wanted to back up a little bit. The one thing that's leaving me scratching my head on this, they're making it easier for annuity people to sell annuities from people's 401ks and such. I got to wonder who's sponsoring this thing.
Yeah, that part, I don't really agree with that.
Now,
but
big insurance is to be reckoned with.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you can do that now. You can buy an annuity if you want to. I don't see why they need to make it easier for it to happen. That doesn't make sense to me.
Annuities are not investments. They are transfer of risk products that solve problems.
Income problems.
The very, very few things are guaranteed to pay you for the rest of your life. And we meet a lot of people whose parents are still alive. Sometimes grandparents, some of them had lasted into their 90s and even a broken 100, as my grandmother did. It is a little scary when you think about the concept of having income that runs out when you do and not until. So, yes, annuities have their place. So do pensions, Social Security, and so on, but everybody's different. The worst way that anybody can sell an annuity to someone is to say, how much money do you have? That's the size of the annuity you ought to have.
Yeah.
That's not solving a problem. That's selling a product. It's supposed to be a problem solver. But let's put that aside. The change to 72 would be a very welcome change. Now, there's another one being proposed by Cardin and Portman. It is called the Retirement Security and Savings Act. That has not gone any further than being introduced to Congress on Tuesday. That would actually raise the 72 age, or if it's still 70 at the time, whatever it is, it would raise the RMD age to 75. Now that, I think, given what I was talking about with the life expectancies being artificially depressed by the opioids and such, but for regular people, that five-year difference would make a huge difference in your ability to provide for your own longevity. So I hope it goes But I'll take anything. This is a good first step if the Secure Act goes through. So never know. Once in a while, they do something crazy and pass a bill that's actually good for people. They are also one out there that I don't like. Imagine this. Introduced by Maxine Waters. Called the Consumers First Act, or H.R. 1500. And she claims that under Director Mick Mulvaney, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has been devastated. This act would, quote, fix it. Beware, people, beware. That should be eliminated from our vocabulary and our government. If there's one thing this world doesn't need, it's a Consumer Financial Protection Board run by the government. Scary. Real scary. Let's see, the IRS being, I told Adam at the break, it's weird, but for some reason this Congress has taken on a lot of financial stuff, which is really good for the discussion, I guess. The Taxpayers First Act of 2019, introduced by Kevin Brady of Texas, who I kind of like, it's going to do a couple of things, but one of them that I thought was very interesting, it would make it illegal for the IRS to create a free tax preparation software package of its own.
Hmm.
You see the conflict of interest that could come up under that one?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant. Of course, everybody on the other side is railing against it, but not me. And it also says the taxpayer should not have to use a private company to pay their taxes online. Yeah, well, that's a great argument, isn't it? No, thank you very much. But there's... just watch for these things. As they get introduced and get tweaked a little bit, I'll keep you posted on them. But all of you who are in my age group, born around 1950, might be some relief at the end of the tunnel out there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder what would happen if you were 71 and you'd already started taking and then they raise it to 75.
I'm wondering about transition, too, or if this is going to be phased in.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. You know, by the time they get done with it, the committee is designing the racehorse in there, and the right. Camel will walk out from the tent only when it's ready.
Exactly.
I want to throw out one thing quickly before Adam hits the 401k subject. There are two reverse mortgage companies, RMS and LiveWell Financial, that went out of the reverse mortgage business recently. And RMS is the only one I'm familiar with out of them. And it was not something they did that was wrong. It was a parent company problem. That's not really an issue because they are not servicers. Your loan will go to a servicer just like it does if you have a conventional mortgage. But there are always going to be scammers out there. So people read about this stuff, and they're calling people who have reverse mortgages and trying to scare them. They say that they can sell you a reverse mortgage that you don't have to worry about because your company went bankrupt and things like that. Don't worry about it. Every single reverse mortgage is guaranteed. You have insured your reverse mortgage from the moment you sign the dotted line. You have insured it. It will simply go to another servicer. You will probably not even know who it is, where it is, or anything about it. You will probably have no contact. You do not need to make any changes if RMS or LiveWell had your reverse mortgage. If there are any questions about that, call us at the office at 904-685-1505, and we'll talk you off the ledge there. Don't pay another $7,000 to somebody for a problem that you don't have.
Right. Yeah, don't refinance your reverse mortgage because of this news. It's not worth it.
No.
It will not accomplish anything.
Nope. All right, I want to be a 401k millionaire. How about you?
I would like to be, and this article in particular has seven tips to becoming a 401k millionaire. I agree with most of them, maybe not all of them, but in general, it's pretty good advice. So the first thing they say is be consistent and persistent, and that one I definitely agree with. And what that's saying is don't take months off, contribute every month to have it taken out of your paycheck. Before you know it, you won't even miss it because it's just like, you know, paying your health care or your taxes. It's just gone when you get your check.
But what if market's dropping?
Then maybe increase your contribution.
the toughest question of all for many people, how do you throw money at something that's going down? But you bite your tongue and you throw money at it, more money.
The best time to do it in general. The other thing is contribute enough. And this year, the limits increased to $19,000 or $25,000 if you're in the catch-up phase of your life. But $19,000 for those of us that are under 50. So you don't have to contribute $19,000, but it should be everybody's goal to get there eventually. So I understand that that's a lot of money and it's not viable for everybody, but it is a really worthwhile thing to set a lofty goal and then try and achieve it.
That goes back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier. The contribution side, the front side of the IRAs, has been sort of stymied for so long that we've got individual programs for small business where you can do $19,000 and only six on an IRA. And
yeah.
I do not understand.
Makes no sense.
Why this government can be so colorblind, I guess, as to not understand that $6,000 and $19,000 is way too large a discrepancy for just having a business. We've been talking about it forever. Nobody seems to be listening. But anyway, there's the rest of the tips, Adam, will go over right after the break. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have this segment sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question still open. What's been the average annual return of the Dow in the 8 years since the last time it was down 5 weeks in a row? And speaking of reverse mortgages, good morning, Marshall.
Well, I just wanted to ditto your comments from before.
You're absolutely spot on
the issue.
Good.
How about 2% on the trivia question?
Too low.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
My question for y'all.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, someone older than Adam contributes to a 401k, so they get to put in, I guess it's $25,000?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. If they make more income than that, can they contribute that additional amount into a Roth up to, is it $6,500 now?
That's $7,000 now, yeah.
You're assuming age 50 and up.
Yes, the answer is yes, as long as they're not above the income limits for a Roth, you can.
Okay, and that income limit is over
$150,000. $199,000
for a married couple, that's correct.
Yeah, so it's like out there in la-la land, except for financial planners, I understand.
Well, yeah, okay. We make that in January.
Right.
Yeah, well, good. Well, again, thank you for the show. Appreciate it.
Marshall, one more thing, and not for your sake necessarily, but for everybody else out there. Even if you max out on your 401k, you can still contribute to a traditional IRA. The rule is not about who can contribute. The rule is only about who can deduct it, and you won't be able to. But you can still put it in there.
Yeah,
and grow tax-free. So, all right. We appreciate
it,
Marshall.
So
have a wonderful Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thanks. And thanks for listening, and thanks for calling, because the phones have been a little quiet. So if anyone else wants to take a shot at the trivia,
it's true.
It's 222-8255.
And you know that Marshall's been in the reverse mortgage business for a long time. He's been on the show multiple times, and probably will be again before this year's out.
Yeah.
But the reverse mortgage got off to a very bad start, as you probably know. It got a bad reputation that it worked very hard to earn, and it should have gotten it. Now they're trying to weasel out of it. And the only way they can get out of their bad reputation is by doing things right. So guess what they're doing? They're doing things right.
Yeah, it's really a good product now for the right situation.
Yep.
You don't want to just go out and take it blindly. But if you are one of the people that it fits for, it is absolutely a good product.
I was praising annuities for the right situation a bit ago. Reverse mortgages for the right situation are wonderful. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's happening?
I just want to take a shot at your trivia.
Shoot.
Shooting four.
Still too low.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, and think what we've been through, too. A terrible December we had, the correction of 18. And
yeah, you know, it just 2015 was a down year, I believe.
Yeah.
Or 2016, one of the two. 2015.
Keeps marching along, but even better than four.
Yeah, good gravy.
All right.
Okay.
We appreciate your call.
You guys have a great weekend.
You too.
Memorial Day. Things aren't so bad out there, are they?
No. No, not so bad. So let's get back to the seven tips to become a 401k millionaire. The average person that did become a 401k millionaire contributed 16%. So like I said, you don't have to make 19 or 25,000. You don't have to put that in every year, but it should be, it's a really good goal. And if you can get to 16%, it looks like you'll have a higher chance of retiring a millionaire.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense to me.
The next one is take appropriate risks. And that's really good advice because we see it all the time. People are too conservative with their investments, especially when they're young. And the whole point, one of the great things about being young is that you can afford to take more risk because your time horizon is longer. And that, by definition, allows you to take more risk. So don't be too conservative. Don't put it all in a 2020 retirement or target date fund if you're a 25-year-old. Right. You need to be invested heavily in the S&P and maybe some other options besides just a target date fund. All right. So, and that's actually what their next thing is, don't assume target date funds are the answer.
That's now, right. They are for small savers.
Yeah. I'd like target date funds. Yeah. So don't get me wrong. They're a really good product and they serve a really nice purpose, but they're not for everybody, especially once you get to certain levels of saving. There's a lot better way to allocate your money, and that's where we come in. People come to us to do that for them. And this is something that if you have $500,000, you should not be investing in a target date fund. You should be allocated in a different manner and be monitoring and looking at your investments much more carefully than what a target date fund will do.
Yeah, I advocate, boy, that was easy for me to say. I advocate somewhere between 50 and 100,000. You start giving some serious consideration to allocating your own money rather than just using a de facto target date fund.
All right. Invest during a long bull market. Now, this one to me doesn't really make sense. You should always invest.
Tell me when they're coming.
I know. It's ridiculous. I mean, that's just an arbitrary point in time. It should also say invest during a long bear market.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Why would they single that out? I don't really get that one.
Well, maybe the first corollary should be the rule, invest during the bull market. It should invest more during the bear market.
Yeah.
Because everything's on sale.
Right. So the other one, next one is don't fumble the ball before crossing the goal line. And what they're talking about is not rebalancing. And the problem there is when you see you're targeting a 60-40 portfolio, 60% stocks and 40% bonds. But over time, those stocks perform really well and you actually get out of balance. So you get up to 70% stocks and 30% bonds and you're older. So now you are not only not at your target allocation, but you're taking way more risk than what you had set out to take. And you're older. So that combination of things is a potentially disastrous. So what you need to do is sell some of those stocks, invest more in bonds, and consider upping your bond percentage as you get older.
As to the frequency of rebalancing, I've read every story there is, from quarterly to semi-annually, annually, whatever, once in a while.
I believe in the arbitrary theory.
When
it gets too far out of your comfort zone or out of your original allocation, then you rebalance.
Yeah, but 3% is not out of your zone.
No.
That's a rounding error.
And you never know what the market's going to do in any given year, so you need to consider that as well. So if you're rebalancing annually but nothing's really happened, then there's no need to rebalance. Now, if your stocks have run up and your bonds have declined, then annually, then after that year, you should rebalance. But again, I'm with you on that one. I don't think that a set time is the appropriate answer.
Now, there's never been a study that I found where there was a solid, provable causation of better returns from rebalancing more often than you once in a while.
And in a lot of cases, you can generate extra trading fees, which can actually hurt your return.
Yep. And taxes.
Yes.
Depending.
Second to last one is pay attention to those old 401k accounts. And that's something that we're big proponents of. When you leave the company, make sure your money leaves with you. Roll it over to an IRA.
But not in a check form made out to you.
No, put it in an IRA. Roll it over. Do not take the payout and pay the penalties and the taxes. Make sure that but just don't leave it sitting in an old 401k account that you're more than likely going to forget about. Even if it's just a small amount, several hundred or a couple thousand, roll it over. It's worth it. Keep track of your money. Don't go, you know, wake up one day and be 60 and realize that you have 14 different 401ks spread out across the country.
No, I call that financial clutter, and we see a lot of it.
So the last one is just the bottom line, and basically what it says that no one became a 401k millionaire without starting a 401k, so that's the most important step.
Yeah, and as Adam will tell you and everybody knows, the first 100,000 is the hardest thing.
It is.
And when you start seeing the value of compounding is when you get your account balance up to have enough figures beginning at about 100,000 that the money that you've already paid in is starting to make you a lot more money than the money you're putting in.
Yeah, we hear it all the time from our younger investors, and they'll have a great year, and you know, let's say their account goes up 10%, but they only had $2,000 invested. Now they're at $2,200, and it's really disappointing.
It is.
But
you'll put in another.
Yeah. Two. Then, but over time, if you have $100,000 and you do 10%, then you made $10,000.
Yeah.
And at $1 million, it's $100,000.
And so, if you add $10,000 or $15,000, $16,000, whatever, to it, you're gonna really be amazed when the compounding curve gets out over about the 24th or so year. It starts to get real steep.
Definitely.
And that's a beautiful thing to watch. All right. In the 8 years since the Dow last was down 5 weeks in a row, it has averaged 9.48% a year compounded annually. And where I come from, that's pretty much average. Funny how averages take over regardless of all the bad times, all the crashes and so on.
Over a long period of time.
Yep. If you got the time in the market, you're going to do just fine. Again, happy Memorial Day. Remember the 650,000 plus. Salute a veteran. We will be here, as always, next Saturday, same time. Thanks. This is the Family Financial Hour.